Well, see if we can scratch out just a little bit more room and dig into some things that are around organizational development. So tonight we're going to talk about how to connect some of the tools, because I haven't been able to give you all the tools, but how to connect some of the tools that I've been sharing with what it looks like to build your organization into a robust, strong, vision-forward type of organization with strong teams within those organizations, all right? So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Before we get too far into that, I want to share one more tool. So how many of you have ever had to deal with an upset customer? Or, oh good, look at those hands go up, all right? Do you have a tool for it? Because I'm about to give you our tool. It's the TL tool on how to deal with an upset customer. So before I share that with you, let me just tell you a little bit about anger, all right? Now, I know no one in this room has ever been angry except for me, but anger comes from three primary places: fear, frustration, and pain. And the pain can either be physical or emotional. So when you see someone who is angry, typically what's happening with them is that there's been something that has provoked either fear, frustration, or pain that has now created this reaction that is somewhat extreme, usually. Now, by the way, I've also seen anger that doesn't have what we call the wild sort of demonstration, if you will, that we often associate with anger, but it's still as devastating because it's very calculated in terms of the work that it does against relationships. But here's the amazing thing that happens when we get angry. When we get angry, our body produces a chemical called epinephrine. And that epinephrine, when it moves into our brain area, shuts down the rational part of our brain so that you're not thinking in a normal way. And if you've ever seen people get so angry that they couldn't think straight, that's where that comes from. Literally, their rational thinking shuts down. And because it shuts down, they often do and say things that they normally wouldn't. Does anybody identify?
Is that the red button?
That's the red button. Yeah, you want to stay away from the red button, Eddie. All right? Look for the green or the calming blue button, okay? Quick story. I shared a little bit about how my own issues around anger have come up, but they started pretty early. I got angry as a young boy pretty easily. And it was out of a unique combination of fear and frustration for me. I wasn't the sharpest crayon in the box, all right, when it came to academics. And because I struggled with academics, it often would reinforce the lies that I believed to be true about myself. And when the academics became something that was detrimental to me, my behaviors then started to move in an inappropriate way. So in third grade, our third grade teacher, Mrs. Will, was passing back the math test from the day before. And so we sat in five neat little rows, and I was about the fourth person in my neat little row. And immediately my brain begins to think about what's about to happen, because I had a track record of not performing well in academics, especially math. It just wasn't a real good subject matter for me. So she gave the test stack to the first person. They leaf through, grab theirs. Now, what am I thinking, by the way, when they're leafing through? Ah, yeah, that's right. They're seeing what I got, right? And then they pass it back. Next one, next one. I get my test, and on the top of my test is a big red F. Everybody knows what F stands for, right? Thank you. Yes. He's been in my class before. That's right. It stands for fantastic. So I got my big red F with a big red circle around it. And next to the big red circle is a big unhappy face. And next to the big unhappy face is a personalized note from Mrs. Will that says, "We need to talk." Well, I'm a very proactive guy. So in third grade, I stood to my feet, I held my test up, and I yelled, "What the F is this?" Except I used a little flowery, more flowery term than fantastic, all right? Let's just say that. And of course, she looked at me like I had three heads, which at that point, I didn't really have my head because the epinephrine had kicked in. I'm angry right now, and I'm doing things that I normally, with a right mind, wouldn't do, including calling out my third grade teacher in front of the rest of my classmates. Guys, that's all connected to that unique hippocampus, that story, that self-identity definition, the thoughts I believe to be true about myself. And watch this, when you encounter angry people, there's probably something going on way beyond the issue that they think is at hand. All right? So there is a way to deal with an upset customer. So let's start with that, all right? An upset Patty. How do we do it? Now, let's think about this. What if you had step one, what would it be for you? What do you think would be the first thing you should do? Someone's upset. They've come to you. They're angry. Their boiling point's going cuckoo. What's your first thing that you would do? I'm going to give you the first one, right? Remain silent. All right? All right? That's your first one. Shut up. Say nothing. Sit there. Make sure you give them your eye contact. But this is not your turn to talk. By the way, if their epinephrine and everything is going off and their rational thinking isn't there, they're not even going to hear anything that you say anyhow. It's going to stoke the flame. That's right. So step number one, friends, remain silent. Now, if we've done that first, what would possibly be our next step then? What could we do next? Listen. Any other thoughts? Repeat back what they told you. You ready for this, guys? Like I said, this isn't rocket science that I'm putting in front of y'all. This is just real simple stuff. Remain silent. Step two, remain silent. Okay, you ready for this one? What's step three? You guys are good here. All right. There it is. Step one, step two, step... Look, here's how you know when the anger is actually dissipated to a place where you can engage. All right? And it's when the frequency of what they're doing and sharing and the intensity has diminished to an almost stop, okay? The frequency and the intensity are now into that. They're done. You can tell. They wore themselves out, right? All right? So once that's happening, when you do engage with them, you engage with them with this statement. Thank you for your feedback. This is how we improve. Now, I didn't talk about feedback in terms of how we communicate it, but we believe that all personal feedback is relevant. And the reason why we believe that it's relevant is, number one, science says that it is, and number two, it's always relevant to the relationship. Now, when I use the term relevant, that is not synonymous with being true. Feedback is information. That's why you thank them for their information. You thank them for their feedback. Because guess what? It may not be true, or it certainly may not be 100% true, right? And when you thank them for their feedback, it allows you to acknowledge that you've heard what they've said, okay? So this is a simple process, but one that requires some intentionality. Step number five, that's when you tell them or repeat back to them to make sure you've fully understood what they've shared. Okay? Now, If you don't have a customer service department that actually has the ability to record when angry customers call in, which most larger operations have now, every time you call a bank, what do they say? The following, you know, whatever is going to be recorded for quality purposes. No, it's going to be recorded because they've had so many litigation issues that they have to record it now. It protects them. It's a CYA. That's all that is. All right? So when you don't have that ability, you write down or jot down or acknowledge and share back to them what they've said. And then step number 6, commit to action and follow up. So if you really want to engage a customer in a way that will make them a customer for life, even if you weren't the one who created the problem, you try to figure out how to solve the problem. All right? And you do it in a mutual way. So it's a commitment to action, and then the ability to follow up on whatever that commitment would be. And then the last step in it is to actually fulfill the commitment and do what you said you were going to do. So this simple process in terms of handling upset customers, one, allows you to understand a little bit of the neuroscience, a little bit of the emotional side of who we are as people. And then with that understanding, know that when people are angry, a chemical's going off in their brain, right? And your ability to reason with them when they're in the height of their anger is not going to happen. So you got to wait till the anger settles and you can engage them. Now, if you've ever sat in a boardroom or in a meeting of other business associates and you see people getting angry, start writing down everything that's being said, because you are now about to become the smartest person in the room because they're not operating with a full brain. So take advantage of those moments. When you see people get angry in a business setting, start taking notes. They're probably saying things that they wish they never would, and that's the kind of stuff. And now you can actually put something on the table and they're going to go, wow, where'd you come up with that? I just been thinking about it for a while. You know, and they'll think you're a genius, because you have a right mind, all right? So again, simple tool, but one that we think is helpful, especially for business owners, people who do business with clients or customers or whatever, okay? Let's keep going. By the way, if you're wrong, do the 6-step apology and make it right. If the customer is wrong, explain and work on a solution. Now, how many of you have ever heard this statement, the customer is always... Not in our book. The customer is not always right, but they are always the customer. The customer comes second and the employees come first. When your people know that they're the ones that are valued the most, they'll work for you the hardest. And they'll produce and they'll go above and beyond. But the moment that the customer becomes first is the moment that your employees feel like they're secondary and that they don't have the value in your eyes that they should, because they're the ones who make it happen. So while our culture says that the customer is always right, that's crazy. You ever see signs that say 100% customer satisfaction? Boy, I want to see the profit line on that company. I'm telling you right now, they are losing money. There's no way they're making money with that policy. Can't do it. So think about how you're engaging customers and do it with a realistic approach. Because if you do, you're going to be able to not only make them happy, but you're going to also be able to make your employees happy. Okay? Any questions about this last tool? Let's keep going. All right. So I told you yesterday that we were going to introduce how to conduct an effective meeting. It was one of the things that you actually asked for last night. So this is that tool. It's called the Waddle Meeting Model. There are 5 components to the Waddle Meeting Model. What would the W stand for? How about welcome? There you go. Nice try. Keep going. Yeah, you know. Yeah. You know, you're wrong. Yeah. So the welcome, it's where you do pleasant greetings, you share good things, you give affirmations. You heard last night when I had you get together, I said, find a partner and share something good with each other. So I did the waddle when we walked in here last night. I engaged the process and demonstrated it throughout the entire course of that and well into today as well, all right? So being able to actually map out what you're going to do at the beginning and what you're going to do when you're at the end is going to allow you to then know not only how much time needs to be associated or given to these areas, but then what your emphasis might be in these areas. So the W is for the welcome. The A is ask questions. Ask open-ended questions about them, their needs, and their agenda. Is there anything that you want to talk about before we get into the heart of today's meeting and why we're here? Is there anything that anyone has to share or anything on your mind? Think about the number of meetings that you've gone into over the years where you have been preoccupied with something going on outside of whatever that meeting was meant for. And you couldn't engage in the actual meeting because why? You were either preoccupied with something that was on your mind or you were distracted, right? So to be able to ask open-ended questions, you now find out what they're thinking. You find out what is on their mind, and it also clears the mechanism so that they can engage at a higher level. Because when you get to the D, which is the discussion, you want to be able to have everybody focused and attentive. This is where you discuss your meeting agenda. And if time permits, you include those items that may have been brought up. Now watch. Last night, my agenda is your agenda. So while I'm shaping the weekend around specific things that Andrew and I talked about prior to coming here, guess what I did? I asked you an open-ended question and I said, think about leaving here on Saturday around 12 noon. What do you guys want to talk about? Is there anything that you'd like to improve? And those were the things you put up there. Guess what? Your agenda was a lot like what I had prepared when I came in the room. But it allowed you to engage, right? So the welcome, the ask, the discuss, and now the E, which is empower. The ability to do something with what was done or shared in that meeting. Does anybody remember what I empowered you to do last night during our first session together? Yeah, it was actually to go out and practice the affirmations, huh? To think of one or two people that you might personally go and affirm. Then when we got in here this morning, what did I do? I reviewed last night's meeting, so that now can be a part of this ask of a new meeting, so that you connect the dots with what you've been doing all along. So a review sits in the A portion of a next meeting, all right? So you've got the welcome, you've got ask questions, discuss, empower, and now the final one, which is to launch. We don't believe in ending meetings. We believe in launching meetings, sending people out. We don't like retreats. We like to advance, right? We want to empower. We want people to be focused forward so that when they take things, the intentionality around how we structure our meetings allows for those participants to possibly engage and do something with the investment you made in that meeting, okay? So it's a simple tool, but one that is a game changer. You can do this tool right here, and you can shape it with, let's say you've got a half an hour meeting, okay? You've got 30 minutes, 5 minutes for the welcome, 5 minutes for the ask, 15 minutes for the discuss, another five, you know, break it up. Just, I'll figure out a way to get you the, I've actually got a template to send out to everybody. That will be a nice little follow-on. You can keep it up, print it out, use it. This is a really, if you're looking to gain some efficiencies and engagement with your team, this tool is a home run. Are there any questions about this or how to use this? Is this a helpful tool for you? Again, for us, when we engage in this idea of raising up transformational leaders who can teach, train, and equip other transformational leaders, we want tools that are transferable. And we don't want them to just be for one area of our lives. We want them to be usable in just about every area of our lives. So, hey, dads, you want to be the man about town? Use the Waddle meeting model at the dinner table. Ask your open-ended question. Boom. While everybody's talking, you're eating. You're sitting there, you know, you just got the family to engage in a way that maybe they normally don't, and you're getting all the information and the scoop. Boom. You welcomed everybody by praying, whatever it was. Hey, somebody tell me something good that went on today. What? Yeah, come on. Something, there had to be something good that went on today at school. You can use this at the dinner table. This is a simple tool that is transferable into other areas besides a business meeting. All right. Now, I want you to take a few moments, and on one of the pages that's got some room for you to take some notes, I want you to write down, a handful of what you think are appropriate qualities and skills of a leader, okay? Skills and qualities that you know you would want to see in a leader and that you yourself would hope to have as a leader. So write down four or five, and then in a moment, turn to your neighbor and share your list with each other, all right? And then in the midst of that, see if you can come up with or share what your personal definition might be of leadership, all right, or a leader, okay? A leader is blank. So take a moment, write a few of those down, then turn to each other and just have a brief discussion about a definition for leadership and share your qualities and skills with each other. Turn your attention back up here, and how'd you do? Did you come up with a pretty big list? Yeah, so here's what we like to do with a list like this, and you can make up a pretty healthy list, but you can do a couple different things. One, you can take these attributes, and then you can do a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being really poor, 5 being really good. And then you can do a 360 evaluation within your organization. And take those skills, evaluate yourself. How do you think you are with being visionary? How do you think you are in terms of being humble? All right? Evaluate yourself first. Then take the same list and ask your team to evaluate you. It's called a 360 evaluation. And then take a look at those and break them down and just ask some of those hard questions. Boy, they see me a lot differently than I see myself. By the way, the average person has about 3.4 blind spots, okay? So if you're not getting feedback, if you're not getting evaluations from your team because you kind of operate with that old style of command control, the boss doesn't get evaluated by his employees, the boss evaluates the employees, there's a good possibility that you may not be hearing some things that really could be helpful. So a 360 type of evaluation allows you to look at yourself and maybe see some blind spots or some areas that you may not recognize every day. Evaluation is our friend. But it's amazing the two things when I go in and out of organizations that seem to be eluding or the most neglected are accountability and evaluation. And if you build those two things into your organizations, whether they're your family or, you know, your businesses, man, you're going to see a shift in the way things, you know, happen on a daily basis. So that's what I say. Highlight one or two that you want to improve based on how you've now looked at those attributes and skills, and then dig in. And then ask yourself this question. What am I willing to do that others may not be willing to do? That was the question I asked last night. Remember, that's the only thing from a leadership standpoint. When the rubber meets the road and we really start to differentiate ourselves, there's a lot of information out there, but there aren't a lot of leaders who are willing to do things that others who say they do the same thing you do are. All right? Which for us is a key piece. Now I ask you to think about a working definition. Anybody have ones that you think are really gems that you want to share with the room? Definition of leader, what'd you have here? A leader is one who not only can but will, that inspires and empowers others to follow or go. Wow, be still my beating heart. Man. This is good, huh? I like it. Anyone else top that? Come on. Any other thoughts around definition of leader? Let's hear it. One who motivates and leads by example. Here's ours. It's pretty simple. When we are willing to lay down our life for those we lead or influence. So we kind of framed our definition off of this guy, Jesus, that we think is one of the, if not the best leader in the world. I'd like to know who is, but in our opinion, that's our standard. So we base this definition off of that. When we are willing to lay down our life for those that we lead or have influence, because that's what he did for us. And because of that, it can be modeled in a way that can really be transformational. So I have a question for you tonight. What does it look like for us, just in a day-to-day orientation, to lay down our life? What would an example of that be? Putting others' needs ahead of ours. What else? Listening to understand. Doing the task that no one else wants to do. Yeah, giving time and energy to develop people. Putting your personal agenda aside. This is what it looks like in a day-to-day activity. It may not mean for you to actually give up your physical life, though our soldiers, our military service, that's what they do. When they sign up, they literally sign up willingly to say, I'm willing to lay down my life for everybody to have freedom. That's a pretty powerful commitment, isn't it? All right? So this definition for us really connects to not only the Jesus way, but it also allows us to engage in a kingdom mindset when we're demonstrating leadership that is often neglected, all right? So this is a couple points that we think separate kingdom leaders. A kingdom leader is patient. In other words, willing to wait for and trust God to break through and manifest his power because of his love for his people and for the lost. Patient. A kingdom leader is called. Called to a city or a community or a vocation, whether it's a pastor, a leader, a boss, and empowers others to lead because of their heart for that community as well as for the lost. A kingdom leader chooses to live a lifestyle of prayer and worship. repentance, and forgiveness are walked out on a daily basis with confidence that God is our only source of power to solve the problems we face. A kingdom leader is humble, humble enough to be effective as a team leader, not domineering, willing to acknowledge we cannot do it alone. A kingdom leader has no selfish ambition, no personal agenda. God's agenda is their only purpose, and they can easily answer yes if God asks them these questions. Would you give up your church, your business, or your ministry? Or would you be okay if it shrunk for the greater purposes of reaching others for Christ? A kingdom leader is transparent. They're willing to walk in total transparency with bumper people, bumper buddies around them, and to hold nothing back. And last one, a kingdom leader, if you can check yes to these statements, then there is an understanding that prayer, worship, confession, repentance, forgiveness, working together, doing life together are lifestyles and not one-time events. Kingdom leadership is a lifestyle, not a job or a position. So, because of how this group operates and how you orient yourself against the Word of God, I thought I'd include those into this description of leaders as well for tonight. Get you thinking about God's standard versus ours, all right? Now I want to talk to you about the purpose of leadership, okay? And for us, when we describe the purpose of leadership, we put it in a simple acrostic, another one of our goofy words called V-STEEL, all right? And there's actually a sheet that I created for you that you can use, that it's written down already, and you can take some notes around this, all right? So, the leader must cast vision. Whether you're the leader of the family, you're the leader of a business, you're the leader of a church, you're the leader in a community, the leader must cast vision, all right? Now watch this. A number of you asked things like, how do I communicate vision with clarity, focus, and order, okay? The only way that you can communicate vision with clarity, focus, and order is if that vision is literally embedded in you and part of what drives you personally. So if the vision that you personally have doesn't move you, there's a good possibility it's not going to move others. So a vision has to be compelling. It has to be catalytic. Visions are meant to create movement, okay? So when you think about the vision that is carrying your organization, whether it's whatever that definition of organization might be, the first thing that has to happen in the course of really getting something solid in a vision is that you personally have to catch the vision. These are my four C's of sort of creating a little bit more meat to what a vision should be. You've got to catch the vision first, and then you've got to cast the vision or communicate the vision. So your ability to be compelled and motivated by it first or to catch the vision is step number one. Step number two is to cast the vision with others that are in relationship with you and whatever you're trying to accomplish. The third step in the process of vision is to cultivate the vision, to literally begin to distill it and break it down in a way that it can actually become something, not just an idea, but actually can create more than just movement, but actually participation. So the cultivation happens, as you'll see in a moment, when we begin to teach, train, and equip others who are in relationship to the vision so that they can actually take on step number four in this process, which is carry the vision. All right? So catch, cast, cultivate, carry. Those are the four primary components of building an appropriate vision for movement. All right? So that's the V. The next step in the purpose of leadership is the S, which is serve. You serve the vision by serving those who are in relationship to the vision. Okay? Now, we do that in our TL model by teaching, training, and equipping. Now, teaching, training, and equipping for a lot of us in the room sounds similar, doesn't it? So I'm going to give you some clarity points to help distinguish between teaching, training, and equipping. Next to the word teach, put the word knowledge. This is where you impart or acquire knowledge in order for the vision to be fulfilled. Training is the experience. It's the ability to take the knowledge that you have and begin to connect it to actual experiences with tools so that that vision becomes practical and applicable. All right? So it's the experience of taking the vision and beginning to personalize it for application. And then the equipping is the actual tools being given to the individuals for them to take that vision, cultivate it personally, and then carry it further. All right? So teaching, training, and equipping, while they sound alike, they're really different. Okay? The next step in this process is to empower. To actually get the individuals who have bought into this vision and move them into a place where they can actually feel like they not only are a part of the vision, but they are actually taking ownership in carrying out the vision. All right? Now, there's a difference between empowerment and delegation. And a lot of the missteps within organizations happen when we try to leapfrog into empowerment when we haven't really been explicit, which is called delegation. Delegation is a very detailed orientation that takes someone who is new to whatever the organization is trying to accomplish, and it takes this unique combination of teaching, training, and equipping, and you actually are very explicit in not only what they need to do, but when they need to do it, and how they need to do it, okay? So it's just like anything else. If I had a new administrative assistant, and I needed to prepare for being here for the weekend, I would not only begin to show her my calendar and how to access my calendar, but she would probably be communicating some pre-arrival emails with the key leaders here so that those things that were being expected of me were aware, but I'd be telling her about every little detail so that the next event that I did, that individual administrative assistant would actually know how my expectations are around that particular thing. And then that knowledge would allow them to not only repeat the process, but then take ownership in the process themselves. But delegation always precedes empowerment, all right? And sometimes in the tyranny of the urgent in our organizations, we get so driven by just trying to keep all the plates spinning that we never have time to actually do that unique component of delegation. And then when the expectations aren't met by that individual, we usually get upset with them. But we're the leader, and we're the ones who have to make sure that this is done. Now, by the way, this here, teaching, training, and equipping, is not the sole responsibility of the CEO or the owner or the leader. The responsibility is that you need to make sure that it gets done. It does not mean that you need to make sure you do it all. And that usually is why small organizations implode. The weight of carrying out all of the responsibility for some reason, is in their mind that I have to do it all. That's not true. You just need to make sure that it gets done. And it was talked about earlier this morning, this idea of hiring people who actually are good at that so that I don't have to pay someone twice for doing the same kind of work, right? Handle it once. Get the professional to do whatever it is that that requires. And then do the stuff that you do well. So that's what that looks like. And then the last two pieces in this purpose of leadership are letting go. This is the ability for the leader to release things in order to find out whether or not what they've put in place is actually working well. It's what I call the language of trust. This is really hard for a lot of leaders because they love to micromanage. Did you do this? Is this done? So if you're asking those kind of questions all the time, guess what that's saying? That somehow the teaching, training, and equipping that you should have done never got done. Because you're worried that what they're being asked to do, they're not prepared for, right? So it's really hard, especially in small businesses, for leaders to let go, right? And if you're transactional and you're really good at doing what you do, it's also hard for you to let go because you'd rather do it yourself than have another person botch it up and make a mistake, because for you, that's an indictment on who you are, all right? I see you nodding your heads. You've all been here, right? The last step here is evaluate, all right? It's that process that we look at what we did, when we did it, how we did it, and we go, what could we do better? How could we improve this process? What could make this experience better for our participants next year? These are conversations that I'm sure are happening every year. It's the evaluation that says, we want this Boost Retreat to be one of the hallmark experiences of Christian business leaders associated with the organization, right? It's part of the process. So what I did for you in this sheet that I created is that there are three columns in it. One has an individual you column, one has an organizational team column, and the other has a community or, what's that say? Community or customer column. So look at what you do and look at your vision and begin to evaluate what you need in terms of either maybe your vision has been around for a while and maybe it needs just refreshed. Maybe you need to get inspired about your own vision. All right? But begin to look at it always from an individual standpoint first before you move it out to your teams or to your customers. Because here's the deal. If we as leaders are not practicing what we preach, then we're going to find ourselves in jeopardy of losing credibility. All right? And this whole leadership thing is about influence. So if I'm not living it, it goes back to that statement that I shared in the afternoon. Tell me I forget. Teach me I remember. Involve me, I understand. If I understand it, I can own it. If I own it, I can live it. If I live it, then I can teach, train, and equip others to do the same. So for us, the personal ownership aspect of leadership and understanding your vision and what needs to happen within that has to be lock solid with us. And the better you get it, the more easily it can be communicated and shared with others. So then, when it does come to building your team, you're going to know exactly what they need in the area of teaching, training, and equipping. When it comes to your customer, you're going to know exactly what they need. And then your influence is going to have a ripple effect, and you're going to be very successful. Does that make sense to everybody? Now, our time is done tonight, so tomorrow morning, I'll stage in a few things that are around this handout that I just gave you tonight. But this handout has five stages. These are the five stages of building a team, all right? And these five stages, the way we look at it is, we take some of the tools. Here, I'll give that to you and I'll read my own. All right, I'm just going to show this to you so that you can look at it tonight, and we'll talk about it even some more tomorrow. But if you'll notice in stage one, the safety stage or visionary stage, there are behaviors that you are expecting. The behaviors are things like understanding and empathy, openness and honesty, team building activities, friendly atmosphere, affirmations are starting to occur, you're sharing the way you feel, and the leader is casting vision. Well, the tools and the ingredients that are necessary for those behaviors to happen are on the other side, which are first impressions, the social covenant, the Waddle meeting model, TFA, change the thought, change the feeling. All of these ingredients are essentially what builds that stage one team. Stage one leads into stage two. Stage two into stage three, four, and five. Tomorrow we'll talk about the difficulty from going from stage two to stage three, which is where most organizations feel their greatest conflict. It's when you go from a cohesive stage and you're simultaneously trying to get role clarity. Because where does a lot of our conflict come in our organizations? Hey, that's not your job. That's my job, right? No, I was told to do that today. What do you mean you were told to do that today? Right? So now you got people going like this, right? And then we feel threatened. Why is Eddie doing my work today? Right? So now that whole thing around our identity and all this starts to mushroom up, and then our inability to actually get done what we thought we were going to get done implodes around us. And that it's really hard for a lot of organizations to actually create that functional responsibility or that role clarity. But if you can do that, your organization is actually going to clip along into a place of productivity and profitability.